This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tax reform deadline. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Monday, October 23rd. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Republican leaders are targeting the end of the year to have a rewrite of the tax code in place. We'll identify the major issues that need to be ironed out.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says the votes are available to pass a bill that would restore subsidy payments to insurance companies.
The U.S. military is preparing to put its nuclear bombers back on 24-hour alert. Hear what's happening at places like Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana.
And the best cities in which to start your dream business.
Charlotte, Jacksonville, Omaha, Orlando, Charleston, South Carolina, those are in the top five. The South dominates the list for the best cities for economic opportunity to open your business. It really does.
Katie Hill at moneyish.com on the best and worst cities for launching your small business venture. Her list in about 20 minutes. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and White House Budget Director Mick Mulvaney say they're hoping for action on a Republican tax reform bill by the end of the year. The details involve how to pay for sweeping tax cuts. The plan floated by President Trump offers up to $6 trillion in tax cuts, but would increase the federal deficit by $1.5 trillion over the next decade. Democrats have criticized the package as a giveaway to the rich and corporations that would balloon the deficit. Mr. Mulvaney was on Fox News Sunday.
The two priorities from the very beginning for the president have been that middle tax taxpayers will pay less and it will be simpler for them. That's number one. Number two, that the corporate tax rate is going to come down. We wanted 15%. The House kept pushing and pushing and pushing. We're talking about 20. We'd love to get back down to 15% as we continue that negotiation.
With a self-imposed end-of-the-year deadline, Republicans have yet to produce a bill. GOP lawmakers disagree on what cuts and how to pay for them. Meanwhile, Mr. Trump tomorrow is expected to take part in Senate Republicans' weekly policy lunch with the tax package on the agenda. Well, now that the Senate and House have both passed their own 2018 budgets, the sprint to write a major tax bill is on. The budget's passage in both houses allows Republicans to pass a tax bill with just 50 votes in the Senate, but they still have a lot of work to do. Wall Street Journal tax policy reporter Richard Rubin is here with a look at what happens now. Rich, what do we have?
The Senate adopted its budget on a 51-49 vote by the skin of their teeth, but they did it. And now that sort of sets the stage for the House to roughly just accept that in this next week or so and for them to start the tax bill for real. What the budget does is it enables the fast-track procedures known as reconciliation. So that means that on the subsequent tax bill in the Senate, they will just need 50 votes, which they can do with only Republicans. And it sort of sets a maximum cap on the size of the tax cut, which is going to be $1.5 trillion over a decade. And so within those two constraints, they're going to get going. So you'll start seeing bills coming out, votes in committee, votes on the House and Senate floors, and off to the races we go here.
All right. So are there any time constraints given the way there were for the budget agreement or the budget proposal, I should say?
There's not. I mean, the time constraint, these reconciliation protections, this ability to fast track it, will run through September 30th of next year. So they've got that's sort of a hard clock on this. They really want to get this done this year. They think they've got a lot of momentum. But the challenge is we're about to see the details. And so where will the tax brackets be? What will they do to retirement savings incentives? What will they do to the child tax credit? What are they going to do to business taxation? All of those details are coming out soon, and so you know, when those come out, that's when you'll see the real intense opposition.
All right. So, is the hard work done at this point, or is it yet to
come? No. The hard work is just beginning. This is essentially as far as where they got on healthcare, which they got a budget, and not quite as far as they got in healthcare. They got a bill out of the House, but this is not where the hard work is. It is hard, but the real hard work is getting a tax bill written, fitting with the rules and getting enough votes to become law.
So when are we going to start seeing some negotiations on some real hard and fast tax proposals here?
I think you'll see the proposals from House Ways and Means Chairman Kevin Brady and Senate Finance Chairman Orrin Hatch within a few weeks. Mr. Hatch said Thursday that he hoped to release his by early November, so I think that's the time frame that we're all working on, is to see something in that frame. Now, look, they're going to try and find ways to make sure they've got the votes they need to pass this thing. So the challenge of actually getting votes and getting details together may take a little longer, but they've got a pretty aggressive time frame to move here.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal tax policy writer Richard Rubin. His piece is called GOP Gears Up for Tax Overhaul Push. How about President Trump's role at this point?
His role has been to step on the gas pedal, to really urge them to move as quickly as possible. And so we'll see how he reacts and what he does as we start seeing more of those details, how much the administration is on board, and how they play when there's a House version that in some circumstances will be somewhat different from the Senate version, where and when and how does the White House weigh in, and what they can do to either attempt to get Democrats on board, which can be challenging, or to make sure Republicans are all in line.
How about expectations from Democrats? How will that impact things?
I mean, look, Democrats have a pretty high bar to get engaged, and we saw that on the budget votes. Democrats, really don't want tax cuts for the top 1%. They really want to make sure that no middle-income households see a tax increase, which may not be possible under the way Republicans are structuring this thing. And they're also concerned about budget deficits, and Republicans are basically willing, at least before accounting for economic growth, to have $1.5 trillion more in deficits. And so the price of getting Democrats would require some really significant changes for Republicans to make on the scope and scale of what they're trying to do.
State and local taxes, is that still kind of one of, if not the biggest hurdle?
It's the biggest hurdle in terms of a block of votes on the House side. So it's sort of a threshold thing that the House tax writers have to figure out is, they know they can't go into this thing with 15 to 20 no votes from New York, New Jersey, California Republicans. So what sort of agreement can they strike with those guys and ladies in the week or two or three or four or whatever it is before we see a bill?
Thanks, Rich. Wall Street Journal tax policy reporter Richard Rubin. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says all 48 Democrats in the Senate would vote in favor of the bipartisan health care proposal that calls for resuming federal subsidies to insurance companies. Mr. Schumer told NBC's Meet the Press yesterday that besides the 48 Democrats, 12 Republicans support the measure.
What this bill does is prevent premiums from going up 20%, even more in some states. That falls on everybody's back. And if Republicans think that if premiums go up, they're going to avoid the blame, if Senator McConnell thinks that, he's wrong.
President Trump has blocked the subsidy money. Obamacare requires insurers to reimburse poorer customers for out-of-pocket costs. It helps around 6 million people. It also obliges the government to repay carriers for those costs, around $7 billion this year. A federal judge decided that Congress never properly approved the money. But former President Obama and Mr. Trump continued the payments until the president ended them last week. It's 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Monday. The U.S. Air Force is preparing to put nuclear-armed bombers back on 24-hour ready alert, a status not seen since the Cold War ended in 1991. It's an exclusive story from Defense One. Here's This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Air Force Chief of Staff General David Goldfein says prepping the B-52s is about the reality of the current global situation, although he says an alert order has not been given. Putting the B-52s back on alert is just one of many decisions facing the Air Force as the U.S. military responds to a changing geopolitical environment that includes North Korea's rapidly advancing nuclear arsenal, President Trump's confrontational approach to Pyongyang, and Russia's increasingly potent and active armed forces. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. During a 6-day trip across the country last week visiting Air Force bases that support the nuclear mission, General Goldfein encouraged airmen to think beyond Cold War uses for intercontinental ballistic missiles, bombers, and nuclear cruise missiles. It's 19 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, at the urging of President Trump, House Republicans will try to pass a budget this week so they can turn their attention to tax reform. Trump warned that action on tax reform is crucial to avoiding political failure in 2018. Budget Director Mick Mulvaney appeared on Fox yesterday.
We felt good last week, but not only did the Senate then pass the bill, we're hearing now that the House may go ahead and either take the Senate amendments or move very quickly to accept the Senate amendments, and we may save as many as 10 or 12 legislative days, which is a big deal.
The president yesterday personally implored House GOP members on a conference call to swiftly adopt the budget that was passed last week by the Senate. A senior congressional aide who has been briefed on the deaths of four U.S. servicemen in Niger says the ambush by militants stemmed in part from a massive intelligence failure. The Pentagon has said that 40 to 50 militants ambushed a 12-man U.S. force in Niger on October 4th, killing four and wounding two. A Pentagon spokesperson calls the claim of an intelligence failure speculation. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl will appear today before a military judge to learn his punishment for endangering comrades by walking off his post in Afghanistan. But first, the judge will have to resolve a last-minute defense argument that new comments by President Trump have tainted the case. Bergdahl faces up to life in prison after pleading guilty last week to desertion and misbehavior before the enemy. For the first time since 2013, the five living former presidents appear together at a concert Saturday night to raise money for hurricane victims. Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, George H.W. and George W. Bush were on stage in College Station, Texas, to raise money for the victims of Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria. Former President Obama.
As heartbreaking as the tragedies that took place here in Texas and in Florida, in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands have been, what we've also seen is the spirit of America at its best.
The event also featured country music band Alabama, Sam Moore, and gospel legend Yolanda Adams. Lady Gaga also made a surprise appearance.
Very nice. Thank you, Jen. It's 21 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. You better hope your business goes south. The majority of the cities with the most opportunity for business owners were located below the Mason-Dixon line. With more, here's Katie Hill, editor at Moneyish.com. Katie, where to go?
The South dominates the list for the best cities for economic opportunity to open your business. It really does. Here's the top five. Charlotte, Jacksonville, Omaha, Orlando, Charleston, South Carolina. Those are in the top five. But in the top 10, I think more than half of them are in the South. And the reason here is lower rents and population migrations, right? So you're going to be, you open your storefront, and the rent is just much, tends to be much lower in the South than it does, say, in the Northeast or on the West Coast. And also, that's where people are moving. So you can look, I think, the South, here, I'll give you a crazy stat. For the 16 states and D.C. that comprise the South, there was an increase of 1.4 million people just between 2014 and 2015. So people are getting out of the Northeast, they're getting out of the West Coast, it's too expensive, and they're moving south. So that's customers for you if you open a business.
Well, I was surprised, too, at the role of rent and how, I guess, the kind of hurdle that can be, especially, I think, in the Northeast and West, right, as cited in the story.
Yeah, you know, and I think that will slowly change, right? A lot of things are just going to online only, and so this may be a little bit of change. The businesses that are on Yelp, which is who did the study, are usually brick and mortar. They have a physical store, so that's obviously factored in here. But yeah, I mean, eventually, right, a lot of this will just be online only. A lot of people won't have a storefront, but in this particular data, this is the kind of thing like restaurants that you would open a storefront or a clothing store, and so that would be a factor. And yeah, I mean, when the rent's too high, you close down if you don't get enough customers. You got to really hustle for that.
We're speaking with Katie Hill, editor at Moneyish.com. Her story is about the best and worst cities for starting a business. So talk about the worst cities and what their issues are.
Well, Gordon, we're quite near many of them, and our home, New York, is on there. But the worst, number one, Boston, then Portland, Maine, Seattle, San Francisco, Providence, Rhode Island, Hartford, New York, San Jose. Those are all topping the list. And again, you can see the theme here, right? These are expensive places to live. Rent is high. And a lot of people are moving, especially the Northeast. That's where the biggest population exodus is. People are leaving the Northeast. And so, yeah, that means fewer customers. customers, higher rents makes it harder to make this all work. And that's what's going on here. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's not like you shouldn't start a business in these places. There's plenty of people living, obviously, in Boston and San Francisco and all that. But you got to really, you know, you got to really hone your business plan a little more and make sure that you can make that money.
You know, I was surprised. So you read off of like 8 cities, which you can easily point to, Northeast, West Coast. Yet at 9 and 10 are Rochester. And then Madison, Wisconsin, like not what I would think, you know, big city rent problems, things like that.
Yeah, unclear exactly on why. It could be, I mean, Madison is a big college town. Often those students help support businesses. Who knows? Those are kind of two wild cards that don't fit into the theme, because when I was talking to the Yelp expert, they said, we're not exactly sure why those end up on the list, but they do. We see that very clearly. You know, I don't know, maybe people are picking maybe the wrong thing for the demographic there, but unclear. But yeah, the other 8 are really follow that high rent, that high rent theme, and makes it a little bit harder to keep going.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at moneyish.com. Again, the best cities in which to launch your dream business: Charlotte, Jacksonville, Omaha, Orlando, and Charleston, South Carolina, the top 5. The worst 5: Boston, Portland, Maine, Seattle, San Francisco, and Providence. Quick reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can also follow me directly on Twitter with the username @GordonDeal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for 3 straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
Catch America's First News online anytime at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.
Thanks for being with us. It is Monday, October 23rd. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Schumer says the votes are available for restoring insurance subsidy payments. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl gets sentenced today for desertion. Says the Taliban who captured him treated him better than the Army. A Vietnam War vet gets a Medal of Honor today. Santa Ana winds fuel wildfire concerns in Southern California. Justin Timberlake will headline halftime of Super Bowl 52, hopefully without a wardrobe malfunction this time. And the Alien Ranch for sale in Arizona. That story in about 20 minutes. Bullying bosses and toxic workplaces have dominated the headlines recently, thanks to Bob and Harvey Weinstein. By the way, more filth from Hollywood. The LA Times says 38 women have come forward to accuse movie writer and director James Toback for sexual harassment. Those encounters were detailed specifically in the LA Times with graphic detail. Experts say that workplace bullying is disturbingly common. A big part of the problem is that there are very few places bullied and harassed employees can turn to for help. Here's MarketWatch reporter Jacob Passy. Jacob, what have you found?
A lot of people have been talking about the harassment and abuse that folks allegedly received at the hands of the Weinstein brothers. And one thought that popped up in my mind was, you know, do you go to HR in a situation like this? Because, you know, on the one hand, you know, HR is obviously there to help the company's employees. But on the other hand, you know, they really do represent the company. And is it a safe space for workers facing a situation like this? And, you know, talking to experts, what I found is, you know, it really does vary from company to company, but folks do say that in many cases, you know, HR will not be your friend in a situation like this. They will be there to, you know, reduce the company's liability, and they're not necessarily there to protect the employees per se.
Jeez. All right, so what are you supposed to do?
You know, the options are not great. You can consider taking legal action, but that also comes with its own risks, and, you know, going through a lawsuit is timely, it's costly, there aren't tons of success stories, there really isn't much law out there regarding, you know, general bullying in the workplace. You know, if it's related to someone's gender, their race, their religion, there are legal protections in place, but for just, you know, general bullying, there really aren't. You can obviously leave your job, and that's probably one of the best ways to get out of a situation like that, especially if you make a clean cut, leave gracefully. Yeah. But obviously not everyone can just go and leave their job tomorrow.
Sure,
so some folks I talked to gave advice on ways to cope with a situation like this. You know, one thing you can do is literally try and put distance between you and the person who is bullying you. You know, research has shown that, you know, even a few more feet between your desk and their desk will greatly reduce the tension and the stress that a person who's being bullied faces.
Oh, wow.
And then you can also, you know, you can you know, use humor, use reason, you know, try to keep emotion out of your interactions with the person. So, you know, laying out the facts and sticking to the facts is a good way to go about this.
Punching them in the mouth is not. Is that what I'm reading?
No,
here?
Yeah, you know, you don't want to make yourself look any worse, and that is something that that folks I spoke with talked about. You know, you can consider going to the bully, going to your boss or whoever it may be who is harassing you, and, you know, pointing it out to them, because in some cases they may not be aware. You know, there is an extent to which some people may be, you know, they're just stressed out and emotional themselves and aren't realizing the toll they are taking on others. But you want to do so diplomatically, because you know, you don't want to insult their egos. That can make the situation even worse for you.
We're speaking with Jacob Passy, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch, about his story entitled, If Your Boss is a Bully Like Harvey and Bob Weinstein, Should You Go to HR? I thought there was an interesting point, too. Someone in the story said bullies know how to stay under the radar. Did they explain how?
Yeah, well, they, you know, there are some people who act intentionally, and some of it is, you know, they to your face at the beginning of the day will be all smiles, all cheerful, giving you the pat on the back, and then in private, you know, that's maybe when they start unleashing their anger at you. Another thing that some folks said, and this gets to the idea of why lawsuits are complicated, is, you know, if someone is an equal opportunity jerk, it's hard to hold them accountable. You know, if it comes up especially in cases where it's related to, you know, someone's gender, someone's race. You know, if the boss can make the argument that they are jerks to everyone, not just you, that can damage your case against them. You know, I think it's worth saying that folks, if they are in this situation, you know, there is really strength in numbers, and I think that's something that has been clearly seen with the Weinstein case. You know, as more people have come forward, you've seen the result of that, and that's true in the workplace as well. You know, if you're being bullied by someone, you know, be mindful about other people's feelings and be judicious about this, but reach out to close colleagues who you can trust and see if they've noticed something similarly.
Thanks, Jacob. That is MarketWatch reporter Jacob Passy. It is 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we know last night's Super Bowl rematch of the Falcons and Patriots was supposed to be the must-watch Sunday night football broadcast of the season, if only fans could see it. According to USA Today, during the second half of the game at Gillette Stadium, a thick fog made its way into the stadium, and it only got more difficult to see the game on television. Given the game's blowout status at that point, Twitter users filled the void by making jokes about the foggy conditions. Some thought that perhaps Roger Goodell needed to spring into action to do something about the league's marijuana policy. One Yahoo Sports writer joked that this was proof that God is a Falcons fan, since even he wouldn't want to watch what was happening on the field. And another user, a Falcons fan, called for an investigation into what was obviously another ploy by the Patriots to gain a competitive edge. He dubbed it Foggate, of course.
Good one.
Bill Belichick back at work.
I happened to flip that on just for a couple of minutes and saw the fog moving in. I thought,
yes.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What could happen? I just couldn't stay up any later.
And I know earlier in the game, right at the beginning of the game, Al Michaels said something about, I guess, the fireworks, the smoke from the fireworks sort of made it just a little bit hazy to start with.
Yeah.
And then maybe the fog rolled in afterwards, and that became a bit of a problem.
When it's humid, those pregame pyrotechnics have nowhere to go.
Right.
They sometimes just hover.
Yeah, there's no breeze
cloud.
To move it around
right.
or anything.
It just sticks around.
Yeah, I've seen that happen in games before, too. And if singing in your car is wrong, I suspect most of us, including Gordon Deal, wouldn't want to be right. According to UPI, a Canadian man was stopped by police for singing in his car and slapped with a $149 ticket. The incident happened last month in Quebec when a man was belting out the 90s hit Everybody Dance Now by CNC Music Factory, and then the music was interrupted by police sirens. The police asked the man if he had been screaming. He denied the charge, saying that he was just singing his favorite song, but police didn't buy it and determined he was screaming, which apparently is a violation in Quebec. The driver says he understands why they may have pulled him over, but he doesn't understand why he got a ticket after police saw that everything was okay. He says he will contest the ticket.
On my command, now hit the dance floor.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I know you've been known to sing in the car on your way here, right? Don't you do some sort of vocal exercise?
Sing
along to the radio?
Find the right tune, sing
right.
along, get the voice ready, yes.
Right.
This song, by the way, I had just added to my workout playlist, believe it or not.
This is one of the most popular workout songs of all time, probably, yes.
I recently removed it because I felt it had worn out its welcome
with
other songs. But I want to say in the last 6 weeks, I had actually added it. I like that band, by the way.
CNC Music Factory.
Yeah, and then that guy, David Cole, one of the founders, died like in the mid-90s, and that just brought a crashing end to CNC Music Factory.
Yeah.
But those guys, they had it going pretty good there for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they would have had the longest of careers, even if he hadn't unfortunately passed away, but yeah, for a little while there, they were the thing.
The current sing-along song, by the way, right now, Fade Away by Springsteen.
Oh, boy.
I don't know why I brought that back. Heard it on the radio and just had to add it. So that's the voice warm-up song now.
All right, well, tomorrow morning, you can do this.
Yeah, we'll see. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Doctors were expecting to treat a Texas woman who was mourning the death of her beloved Yorkshire Terrier for a possible heart attack, only to discover that her symptoms were actually due to a broken heart. The Washington Post says Joni Simpson of Houston was diagnosed with Takotsubo cardiomyopathy, a condition commonly associated with the loss of a spouse or child. The symptoms can mimic those of a heart attack and is also referred to as broken heart syndrome. The condition is most common in women ages 58 to 75. For Ms. Simpson, who's 62, who at the time was stressed due to her son's impending back surgery, her son-in-law's unemployment, and a property sale, it was the loss of the dog named Miha that sent her over the edge. Sometime after the dog's death, Ms. Simpson woke with back pain that traveled to her chest. She went to the emergency room. Doctors eventually discovered her arteries were clear, indicating no heart attack. She was diagnosed with Takotsubo cardiomyopathy and released after 2 days, continues to take 2 heart medications daily. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the Senate is pushing ahead on a $36.5 billion hurricane relief package. It would give Puerto Rico a much-needed infusion of cash. The measure also replenishes rapidly dwindling emergency disaster accounts and provides $16 billion to permit the financially troubled federal flood insurance program to pay an influx of Harvey-related claims. The measure faces a procedural vote today, and a final vote is expected no later than tomorrow. Senator John McCain appeared to take a swipe at President Trump when he called out wealthy men who got doctors to say they had a physical issue so they could avoid the Vietnam draft. McCain was interviewed on C-SPAN 3.
We drafted the lowest income level of America, and the highest income level found a doctor that would say that they had a bone spur. That is wrong. That is wrong. If we're going to ask every American to serve, every American should serve.
The New York Times reported last year that Trump received a total of 5 military deferments during the war. 4 were for education, and 1 in 1968 was for bone spurs in his heels. Writer and director James Toback, who received an Oscar nomination for writing Bugsy, has been accused of sexual harassment by 38 women in a report published in the Los Angeles Times. Many of the women allege that Toback approached them on the streets of New York City and promised stardom. They say meetings would often end with sexual questions and acts. The 72-year-old denies the allegations. David Letterman was celebrated at the Kennedy Center last night for his record run on late-night TV, innovative comedy routines, and for helping the nation start to heal by reassuring that it was okay to laugh again after the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. Letterman says he feels undeserving of the award.
I sat behind a desk. I did enjoy the makeup, and I read introductions off blue cards. So if there's an award for that behavior, I would feel comfortable.
Fellow entertainers gathered to honor Letterman, where he was receiving the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. Among those in attendance were previous Mark Twain recipients Steve Martin and Bill Murray.
Very nice. I always liked his sort of a self-deprecating laugh. I felt that was endearing for some reason.
Unparalleled. He's just amazing.
Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. An alien ranch in Phoenix is on the market for $5 million. The sprawling 10-acre property on the extreme west edge of metropolitan Phoenix is ideally located near what the owners believe is a portal to another universe populated by little gray men. It also has a swimming pool. The Arizona Republic says the Stardust Ranch was featured on the Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures in 2016. On that show, the current owner, John Edmonds, discussed his killing of some 18 extraterrestrials during his 20 years on the property. The bodies apparently disappear after their cosmic death, so any potential new owner won't have to worry about an alien graveyard. This was the same TV show, by the way, in which Mr. Edmonds' wife said she was molested by aliens. They've been trying to sell the property, also known as Alien Ranch, for the past 11 years. Initial asking price, $1.7 million. After the TV exposure, the price is now $5 million. Mr. Edmonds, by the way, hopes you'll watch the TV show before making an offer. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.